And hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to another rousing episode of Chefology. My name is Asabi Goodman, and I am joined by the wonderful Josh DeVetta.
Yeah, yeah.
And the sexiest always. Sorry about that. And the sexiest always, Gracie Mac.
Yes, Miss Gracie Mac.
I don't know
what
to do. You did a riff.
Mac,
what are you
dressed
doing?
In
I know.
Black.
I'm like,
black.
Black. Yeah, sing.
I'll
sing
have
it.
You know this is the dark blue.
It's a Royal Navy.
Yes, if you could see Gracie Mac's outfits, this is what she wears to teach in adults. Mm-hmm. She teaches adults. It is a very sexy outfit. Anyway.
It's like, well, it's just sheer, you know what I mean? Like, it's lazy sexy.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything. You can just see your bra. Yeah.
She is not teaching your children. She is not around them. She has a blue card. Anyway.
today,
we are discussing collaboration. That's right. Duets.
I love it when we're cruising together.
It's like going to be the worst cover of a D'Angelo song ever. So bad.
It's terrible. Anyway. So that's right. We are talking boy, girl, 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 boy, boy, the whole, I guess, is that us, them, they, whatever.
Anyway, I mean, what is the binary? Anyway?
Yeah, right? Yeah, what is it? It's just people, two people singing a song together, two human beings singing a song together. That is what we're talking about today. Unless somebody has
that
Muppet.
Intro. Does anyone feel moved?
Yeah, it's rousing.
It was, yes.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to find out which duets turn Josh on.
Oh.
Yes.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we're back, and today we are talking duets. And so I'm going to turn to our lovely chefologist, Josh DeVetta, and
Hi.
Ask him what duets
All right.
he enjoys.
Let's not waste no time here
nah.
in the chefology lab. We're going to go straight into it. Don't go breaking my heart.
I wouldn't if I tried.
Yes. Oh, honey, you got whatever it is. You made me breathless.
Baby, you're not that kind.
Elton John and some girl called Kiki D.
Yeah.
Who apparently is this like British blue-eyed soul singer. Oh. I mean, are we still referring to things as blue-eyed soul these days? Like,
oh, that
can,
was a thing, wasn't it?
Can POC not have blue eyes if they're mixed? Like, what's going
they
on?
They sure can.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so very dated to say a white girl that sings soul.
Right. I have white cousins.
They
so.
Used to call Christina Aguilera a blue-eyed soul singer as well.
Yeah. Oh, did they? Okay.
Yes, back in the Dizay. Anyway.
I feel
she also had a song called I've Got the Music in Me. That's all I know about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you know that one.
I've right? got, you know, yep.
I got the music
yeah,
in me.
Yeah, that's the one. So that's what she's to sing.
That's probably
so one. Elton and Bernie Taupin, who, Taupin, is Bernie his like longtime collaborator?
I think so.
Like the
that's,
guy that.
Yeah, that's the yeah, one that's, who
I saw that movie, Rocket Man.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, writes all the lyrics, my bad.
Yes, he writes all the lyrics, yeah. But they actually wrote it under a pseudonym.
Oh.
Under two girls, Anne Orson and Carte Blanche.
Did they?
Yeah.
Why?
No idea. It literally just says here under the pseudonyms, and they intended it to be like a Motown-esque sounding song.
Oh. Wait a minute. What was the first name again? What was it?
Anne Orson.
Because wow. I'm trying to hear, like, is there a pun in that? Because Carte Blanche.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the problem. We'll look into that.
Yeah, anyway. Sorry.
We digress. Yeah. And wanted it to sound like a Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell sort of like
totally, yeah.
thing.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, that whole thing of like white people trying to sing soul.
Thank
so,
you.
So,
right.
sort of thing.
Elton.
And they actually intended it for it to be written for Dusty Springfield, which I think is hilarious.
Oh, God.
But they withdrew the offer because he was going to record it with his wife, but his wife was too ill at the time Aww. To record. So, anyway, great song. right? Like from the album, it's a single. It was released as a single. Oh my god! So I was reading through my lyrics. No, it went number.
I was about to say somebody.
It
researched.
Went number one.
Yeah.
And also, funnily enough, RuPaul and Elton John re-recorded it a little while ago. Yeah.
Oh my god! I totally want to hear that.
Yeah, and it went number one in Iceland.
Of course it did.
Because
the RuPaul version.
Yeah, the RuPaul version.
You know, RuPaul gives away so many trips to Iceland. It's not funny. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah.
Now the duet is such a popular duet. Like so many people do it because it's just such a solid duet. Like they've done it on the Muppet Show with like Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog even.
See,
Alan Partridge has even sung it on his show. Yes. They covered it on Glee.
Of course.
Yeah, Lea Michele and Corey Monteith, rest in peace.
Yeah.
They recorded it as part of their duets episode.
So, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they decided to do that song as a duet. Yeah, so really, really solid song. Moving on. We've got a schedule to keep.
Yeah.
So the next one I'm choosing, we'll do this one. One of my favorite songs of all time.
Uh-oh.
My love, there's only you in my life.
Oh, yes.
The only thing that's right. Endless Love.
My first love.
Yeah, come in, Diana, yes. So I'm Lionel Richie. Gracie is Diana Ross.
Obviously. I do not know these songs.
Oh, my God. This song.
You don't know Endless Love?
No, I mean, I know the song, but I can't sing it. I don't know.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
My favorite part. So it's a really beautiful love song.
Yes.
Sort of thing. Very ethereal, I would say, is the way that I feel when I hear it. My favorite part is the last part where it's like, then no one can deny. And Diana's like, this love I have inside and I give it all. I'm getting carried away.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah.
Also, Luther Vandross recorded a version of this with Mariah Carey as well. And it actually is on par, in my opinion, like vocally.
Well, Luther Vandross, of course. And
is
Mariah is stunning.
Yes.
So,
Luther Vandross is like in his own legendary.
I think he's passed away too.
He's passed away. Like, and he was in the closet for a very, very long time as well. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know that.
And so he used to actually sew gowns for Patti LaBelle.
That was like one.
That's
crazy.
And he never came out because he was until like later on.
Yeah,
because he didn't want to let his mother down.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, so Luther Vandross. And now when you look
you
back at
it, you outed him posthumously to me.
Posthumously, but you can also just Wikipedia it. So, and that was the whole thing. And so you watch like performances and you realize he's actually was so camp. Like, and I remember when like he was introducing, there's this performance of at Wembley Arena, and he's about to introduce Mariah Carey to the stage to do like the Endless Love duet, and he's like, and from far away a diva landed in, and it's like, okay, you're gay. You queen. Like, it was full like,
oh,
but like
God.
One of the most beautiful voices in history.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
stunning.
Like, if you look back at the backing vocal work that he did, like back in the 70s, he was all over everything in New York.
He was hustle. Like, he was the hustler.
Yeah,
you know?
He was.
So this song was huge. It's a quintessential duet. Like, I think what I've chosen is a lot of quintessential plus one random one that you guys probably won't know. It's just a beautiful love song.
Yeah.
It's
nice.
It wouldn't fit into radio now, but at the time.
I kind of disagree. Yeah. Like, just with this one in particular. Like, I know what you mean. Like,
what if we didn't know the song?
But that's what I mean. Like, I reckon, I think there's some bits about it, like, that are just so sweet. Like the way that they harmonize together is so beautiful. I don't know. I mean, I guess it would be a bit of a strange.
Maybe if Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande.
Maybe. Who knows? Alrighty. Well, I'm going to move on. Sorry. And we're going to stay in this, like, 80s, 70s vein.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Jackson did a duet. With Syeda Garrett called I Just Can't Stop Loving You.
Yes, I Just Can't Stop Loving You.
Oh, yeah. That one.
Yeah.
So Syeda Garrett is the co-writer of Man in the Mirror.
Oh.
Yeah, so we've talked about this before where she wrote the lyrics and Glenn Ballard wrote the music. Glenn Ballard is the songwriter and producer of Jagged Little Pill, very famous.
Yes.
And a lot of Katy Perry's early stuff as well, that kind of stuff. And anyway, so this song, Syeda wrote the demo. So she recorded the demo for Man in the Mirror because Quincy Jones was looking for some type of album to complete you know, the work they'd already done with Michael, and they were looking for, like, it needs to be a ballad, it needs to be something that's really, really good. And so it's the only song on the album that Michael didn't co-write on the album.
Right,
yeah.
Because okay.
people think that he wrote the song and he didn't.
Yeah.
So this is side. And so anyway, after hearing the demo, Michael's like, who is this girl? She's incredible. Mm. And so apparently, because she was on RuPaul's What's the Tea podcast.
Yep.
And she was saying that when she got the call from Michael Jackson, she thought it was like her assistant like fucking around with her.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like, hi, this is Michael. And she was like, shut the fuck up, and put the phone down.
Yeah.
Gets the call again. Hello, this is Michael Jackson. And she was like, what? And she realized that it was real. And then I remember she was saying, she goes to RuPaul, now, back before I even met Michael Jackson, she was like, Michael was my husband. I love that man. Like, sort of thing. And so he invited her to come in the studio to learn this new song that he had written with Quincy. Hmm. And apparently she got to the studio and he like was really quiet and he was just like, just wanted to let you know that you have a beautiful voice, like that. And basically, but hadn't written out the music, just written lyrics basically and put it on a stand and go, you need to learn this song. And so I'll teach it to you.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Oh my God.
And it's so beautiful because it comes in with like that like fade in of the like little synthy pianos, and it comes in, which I think it sounds a lot like Home from The Wiz.
Yes, it does.
Because Michael ripped off people all the time. Yeah. But different thing altogether. But yeah. I just love the chorus. I just can't stop loving you. And if I stop, I tell you what you're gonna do.
Yeah,
and then
it's
end
so
it. I just can't stop loving you. Or shoes. yes. Mm. So beautifully, like, this is one of these songs. Like, I remember I worked with someone and he loved this song, and he doesn't work with us anymore at my muggle job.
Mm.
And I was like, can this be our song?
Aww.
and so we would play it like while we're cleaning iPads at the end of the day. Beautiful. Like, even though like we weren't actually in love, it was just our song.
You're like, go to reach for the same iPad.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
All right, so let's move. Sorry. Let's move forward a few years and let's get to the mid-90s, because mid-90s had some lit duets.
Yes.
Don't even try this, bitch. Like, it's really, really cool. So Celine Dion, I've talked about Celine Dion a lot lately, but yeah, Celine Dion.
She's worth talking about.
R. Kelly wrote a song for her and they made it into a duet.
True.
Basically. Now, if you've watched Surviving R. Kelly, you'll know that I do not like this man whatsoever.
No. I can't believe Celine did it anyway.
Right? And it was very, like, this is like Celine's foray into R&B sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, because she actually is quite a versatile singer as well. She can sing multiple genres,
yes,
including opera, apparently.
Yeah, she's operatic.
And so, and the song, the chorus goes, I'll be your cloud up in the sky. I'll be your shoulder when you cry. I hear your voices when you call me. I am your angel. Very I Believe I Can Fly, like,
yeah,
sort of esque, which was a huge song back in the day.
Before we all knew what R. Kelly liked.
Yes. And I used to, like, singing Bump and Grind, like, was a staple item in my catalog.
Yeah.
I can't do it anymore.
It's tricky.
Actually, Grace and I have performed that song together a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I love it because the whole, like, my mind is telling me no. It's
so
like, now
good.
I can see why your mind's telling you no.
Yeah.
Because your body is wrong.
Oh,
it just puts all the songs, because all of his songs were basically autobiographical as well.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so okay, we'll move on anyway.
Yeah.
Robert. All right. So, but I love this song. I'm Your Angel. It's just like a quintessential, like, mid 90s R&B ballad sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, having a piano thing, but having like an R&B beat in the background, which R. Kelly kind of brought that sound into the pop radio, you know, realm, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, great song. My last one, it's a bit of an obscure choice because unless you're a true fan, you probably won't know this song, but the song's called Almost Is Never Enough, and it's by Ariana Grande and featuring a guy called Nathan Sykes, who was a singer in this, like, short-lived UK boy band called The Wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Who were put together to try and compete with One Direction at the time. Yeah, basically.
Okay.
But didn't have that huge global, you know,
Direction
fever, whatever it is. Anyway, and so now it's really cool. It's got, like, it's in a triple meter. And it's like, almost is never enough. stuff. It's really it's like her 90s ballad, because her first album was very 90s driven.
Yep. Yeah,
totally. Because it was this whole thing of like, I'm new generation Mariah Carey, I'm gonna belt the shit out of everything. Mm. Oh, I've got whistle register. Oh yeah, I've got breathy vocals. Yeah, I'm gonna do everything.
Yeah, right.
Sort
okay.
of thing. Because the early on in the career was very much an homage to Mariah Carey.
Totally.
Like, completely, even down to like,
it's ridiculous that she wouldn't admit it. It's like, what's wrong with admitting that that was a huge influence for you? Obviously.
Exactly, right. And like the riffs were the same. Just all that
even
kind of stuff.
Look, like, so,
the look,
yeah.
With the yeah, like the honey look with the high ponytail, yeah. And the mm-hmm. yeah, I'm just like, but they're actually but imagine being Ariana Grande and you finally get to meet your idol and she's absolutely gorgeous to you. You're just like, oh, thankfully. But the media tried to feel like Mariah's mad because everyone's comparing her to Ariana Grande sort of thing. And Nick Cannon in an interview one time goes, like, the only reason why she ever got pissed off about that whole Ariana Grande thing, because she's like, why is there a new Mariah Carey? Why can't she just be Mariah Carey and then there's an Ariana Grande?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But labels always do the comparison thing to give you a shot at the market.
Yes.
Like when Mariah came out, they compared her to Whitney Houston because there was no other singer on the charts that was singing in that overly melismatic, high belt sort of way, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So Almost Is Never Enough, great song, and I do have one honorable mention. Oh, one. This I've done really, really well with my segment.
I've
crushed it. So I feel like I can put in at least one.
You could have three.
Beautiful. Well, I'll do them really quickly. When the mountain was high, I didn't falter. When the valley was low, I still believed. Yes.
Yes.
Aretha Franklin, George Melkin. I knew you were waiting. I knew you were. Do it again, ready?
Okay.
5, 6, 7, 8.
I knew you were waiting for me. Yes.
There we go. Great song.
Beautiful.
Also, Celine Dion and P. Ray Bryson's duet of Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
I fucking conic. Just say. Taylor's oldest time, Celine. Taylor's oldest time. And then also, this is like a bit more modern, but No Air, Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown. Tell me how I'm supposed to breathe with no air. That song's lit.
I love that. I remember someone telling me for the video clip, there's like a bit where they're singing to each other. It's all romantic, and Chris Bennett just sat on a box.
Yeah, because he's quite short. Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah, but that was and that's Jordan Sparks' biggest song of her career.
Did they show the box?
And
in the mid 2000s, because I think it came out in 2007, that song, because she had just won Idol the year before or something like that. No, 2008.
Oh, Jordan Sparks. Yeah, okay, sorry. I'm like, who?
No, sorry. So 2008, that song came out because she had won the 2007 American Idol.
Right.
And she first brought out a song called Tattoo, which was like this.
Yes.
Yeah. And then brought out this song. And this went number one in Australia.
Yeah, it was
a huge song.
Yeah. It was
so how do you expect me to live alone with just me?
Because
my world revolves around you. It's so hard for me. I just know the harmony straight away. Yeah, so that's a great duet as well. And that's my choices.
Beautiful, Josh. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take a short break. And then we'll be back with Crazy Mac's choices.
Hey.
Hi, hi, hi.
Hey. Sorry.
Surprise.
I'm like, who's going next? Me. Oh, hey. Yeah. Like, my goodness. Well, if you've been sitting under a rock for the past 20 minutes, I'll tell you right now, we've been talking about duets. So lots of famous collaborations between humans. Usually they harmonize as well. Can you imagine a duet which is just unison?
Well, that's Bananarama.
That's
Bananarama, yeah. I guess that's a trio, though.
That's true. Well, and so we've just heard my choices to the player, so I can't wait to listen to those. And we're now going to throw it over to Gracie Mac. She is going to press the three dots and add to queue. That's what she's going to do. Mm-hmm. If you're a Spotify user, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And we're going to make this playlist even more lit. So, Gracie,
what you got?
Hit me.
Wow.
Baby, one more time. Not a duet.
Whenever you hit me, I always think of Hit Me.
James Brown.
What song is that?
Yeah.
Sex Machine?
Yeah.
No. Is that the one?
No. It's like a
Get on up.
Yeah.
Get up. Get on up.
No, that's not. No, Sex Machine doesn't start with Hit Me, though. But no, it's like a Timbaland tune or something. I mean, I think of it, but can I even
Hit Me. Oh, it's Destiny's Child, Lose Your Breath.
Yes, that's what it is. is. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. That's exactly what
this
I think
pop music
was,
library sometimes in my brain.
I can't believe you just pulled it out of thin air. Yeah. Well done.
He like goes through a little file. Yeah, we don't see it.
Yeah. And I actually saw it as like lose my breath underscore destiny shot underscore dot mp3. That's how I saw it in my head. That's oh my so God. Weird. You all know what I'm talking about.
Do you have some? Are you like projecting something out of your eyes?
Like you're maybe. Yeah, got, like, yeah. Maybe we should do transcripts of my brain thoughts. That's dark. Yeah. Let's not do that. Let's not do that.
I listen, y'all.
Yeah.
Back to Grace.
So I've written my five in the order that I thought of them in. So there's no rhyme or reason.
Oh, not the traditional chronological that Gracie Mac likes to do it.
I do like to do that when I don't have like much emotional connection to the song, like when I've just like the
well,
our previous
songs
episode
up real well then.
Well, like the previous episode with Diane Warren, it was all like all a new learning curve for me. So sure. I just chronologically made sense.
It does
know?
Make sense, yeah, absolutely.
But with this, it was like I love all of these songs
I
that I've chosen.
Love these songs, yeah,
because it's you know it's not genre specific duets. It could be anything. And so the first one I'm starting off with is The Boy Is Mine.
Oh, no one claps for you in my segment, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Do it yourself, I guess.
I was trying to be humble about it. No.
Don't be.
1998 iconic R&B track by Brandy and Monica.
Yes.
Don't need to give it up. Had it bad enough. He belongs to me. The boy is mine.
That was
excuse
in
me, can I talk to you for a minute?
Written by, okay, this is a list of writers. LaShawn Daniels.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say this next one. J-A-P-H-E. Jaffa. No idea.
Right, okay, cool.
J-A-P-H-E, Tedja. I mean, what are you going to do? Fred Jerkins III.
The third.
Rodney Darkchild.
Oh, this is a Darkchild production. Darkchild's huge in the R&B game.
And Brandy.
Yeah.
And Brandy.
Yeah.
And also, Brandy now calls it her song and not Monica's because she's got a co-writing credit on it. Brandy.
Yeah, well, I think she
you know, this
did.
Was a real, like, it was kind of a real feud, right? You know?
No.
Oh, okay, so I'll talk.
So music. Let's talk about this.
Let's talk about the music.
I'm gonna have to jump in on the point stealer over here.
I'm just gonna close my iPad. I'll still have facts
I'm like,
anyway.
Zip it, Josh.
So both singers released it as their lead single, both on their second album.
Both lead singles.
Yeah.
Wow.
Both of them, which is pretty rare, you know.
That never happens.
Like yeah. Mm-mm. It's pretty strange. So, well, I mean, anyway, so it was on Brandy's Never Say Never, which is the second album, and Monica's, she called the album The Boy Is Mine.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, okay. And the song was inspired by Michael Jackson's and Paul McCartney's duet in 1982, The Girl Is Mine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was the kind of inspo for it. Now, it was started, well, apparently Brandy was she came up with the concept for the song and then brought it to the production team and writing team. She got the inspiration while she was watching an episode of Jerry Springer.
Oh, God.
She was like this triangle situation. She got inspired by
that
it.
That show was huge back then too.
Yeah.
It's very big.
Yeah.
We used to plan our class schedule around it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, for uni.
Yeah.
Or college.
Yes.
So the song was, inspired by MJ and Paul McCartney, which as soon as I saw that, I was like, I bet that sounds fucking terrible. I don't know why I thought that, but I listened to it, actually wasn't that bad. Wait, like, I thought it would be really cheesy.
Had you never heard the song before?
No, I hadn't, yeah.
Oh.
The girl is mine.
Oh,
I actually
kind of
liked it.
Oh,
like
you've never heard that one?
The Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it was huge.
The dark girl is mine.
Yeah, it was actually kind of sweet.
It's a very sweet song.
It just made me think of that awful collaboration with Mick Jagger and David Bowie when they did Dancing in the Streets. It just made me think of that. Like, I bet it's fucking terrible. Oh. But it wasn't.
It's because they weren't shaking their asses.
Yeah. It's actually sweet. Anyway. So I spent 13 weeks. The song was the number one pop hit both internationally and US for both singers. The first for both singers. No, that's wrong. Never mind. It spent 13 weeks. Number one. I was going to say it was first for Monica, but not for Brandy.
Yeah, because Brandy, I think Have You Ever went number one.
Yeah, because she had her first album, like, which was huge. Yeah. I spent 13 weeks at number. It spent. Not me. I didn't spend 13 weeks.
You will, though.
You will.
One day.
Yep. On the jazz tour. You're gonna be like a jazz pop crossover.
Pretty much crossover with Billboard Hot 100.
It's like we knew Gracie Mac.
Anyway. Anyway, 13 Weeks is number one. The Girl Is Mine. The Boy Is Mine. Oh, my God. This is awful. I got to start again. We got to redo. Okay.
Yep.
It spent 13 Weeks at number one. The Boy Is Mine. That's the song I'm talking about. Get on board, people. Don't come at me. On the Billboard Hot 100 and sold 2.6 million copies in its release year.
Jesus.
Making it the best-selling song of that year of 1998. Amazing. In the US. I was nominated for a Grammy as Record of the Year and Best R&B Song 1999 and won Best R&B Performance by a Duo or Group. Now, Brandy originally recorded the track as a solo, and then listening back to it with her Fred Jerkins, one of the writers, she realized it needed something, and she decided to use the media kind of fancy stories they were trying to create, this feud between Monica and Brandy. Yep. She started to use that to her advantage by getting her in on the song. So it's kind of like just like this clever business choice to capitalize on this rivalry.
Yep.
That didn't really seem to have any basis in fact, but it's just like she's a fellow R&B teen singer, very similar vein, and yeah, and it was a really smart decision because it was a huge fucking song.
Yes, it was massive. I remember it.
Mm. Yeah, so I didn't read much validity to the feud stuff. Oh,
I think like according to Monica, it was supposed to be like a fabricated thing, but then she at one point could not tell the difference if it was actually fabricated or real.
After they did the collab.
After they recorded it. And then because back then it was all about media fed stories, and so all these media stories were like she couldn't tell if they were real or fake. Apparently like Brandy would be cold to her, she would be cold to Brandy, and so it was actually like cultivating like this real almost feeling. So apparently when they performed at the MTV Awards, they didn't actually even speak during rehearsal. They actually would start out, and you watch the ball, they actually start out in separate corners and don't actually meet on stage together at any point. They're on separate ends, so they really like
weird.
Yeah, like it's a great exercise.
Stupid young bitches. That's I'm like, really?
Well,
come on.
I don't know. That's a bit harsh. Like they're being subject to like the most vitriolic, awful behavior by the media. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
I know. Yeah,
it'd be pretty hard. And you're an insecure teenager.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Well, that's what
and
I mean.
Brandy was
like,
so
young
when that movie came out.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, both of them were teenagers. Yeah.
She went to the prom with Kobe.
Yes, she
it
did.
It was huge news. Because Kobe was just
she also hit someone with a car and killed them.
Brandy did.
What? Yeah, Brandy did.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Brandy did, yeah. Anyways.
What? I remember that. Anyway.
Look it up.
So I know, what's her name? The actress. What's the Catwoman?
Michelle Pfeiffer.
No, the black one.
Halle Berry.
Yeah, that's right. It. Yeah, she hit somebody and killed them with her car.
Shit.
Oh my God.
So
okay.
Anyway, so keep going.
That's a deep dark hole to get into. Like, what celebrities?
She didn't even
have
get manslaughter.
Oh my God. Okay, second on my list is going way back. 1967, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell.
Yes.
Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Yes. So
boom,
good.
Boom.
Dun dun.
Send baby.
So good. I love this song so much. It's so beautiful and joyous. Just like that, when Josh started that, I was like, ah, here we go. Yeah, and the song was written by Nicholas Ashford and Valerie Simpson.
Yes,
Ashford and Simpson.
Yes,
very famous writing team for Motown.
Yes.
They wrote it in 1966 for the Tamla label, which at the time was not a division of Motown, but became one.
Yes, yeah.
And this is a song that they launched themselves into Motown with. So they, I can't remember which song you were talking about before, Josh, but there was a song that was written for Dusty Springfield originally.
Oh, it was Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Don't Go Breaking My Heart. So this was originally also Dusty Springfield wanted it.
Right.
And then they decided no as well.
Dusty
wanted it. She was like, this is great. And they were like, we think this song will get us into Motown, so we're going to retract it from you. Refuse you to. Poor Dusty. I mean, she did fine. She was fine.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, so, and it did. And it ended up being one of the biggest songs on the Motown label.
Yeah.
And then from that, so for Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, they're a very famous duo. They did lots of beautiful songs together. And Ashford and Simpson wrote a bunch of those. Your Precious Love, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. All I Need to Get By.
Yep.
Just all in the same, like very similar vein of like medium tempo, romantic. Just like, yeah, sweet Motown tunes. What was that?
You're All I Need to Get By.
So the Gaye Terrell version was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 1999. There's also a really awesome version by Dana Ross that was made 3 years later in 1970.
Yes.
That's really good.
But they only use the it's all spoken word. So
yeah, it's just like
and then it's just the
bridge. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but I love that version too. I think
and
it's
also
really
the
good.
Sister
and
the Sister Act 2 version is real good.
Oh, true.
Yeah, it's good. But it's basically, it's the same version in terms of like arrangement, right?
As essentially,
the
Tammy Terrell.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. Moving on. We've got Under Pressure.
Oh, clap.
So classic, famously sampled by Vanilla Ice, which, depending on your generation, which song you're going to think it is when that bass starts. So it's released as a single in 1981, and then Queen included on their 1982 album Hot Space. The song reached number one on the UK charts, becoming the group's second number one. Before that was Bohemian Rhapsody, and it was Bowie's third number one. So pretty early big hit in both careers.
Yes.
Yeah. The song came about partially from a jam session that Queen and Bowie had at Queen's studio in Montreux, Switzerland. They had Bowie coming in to sing BB's on a track. The track was Cool Cat, but they eventually scrapped that because Bowie wasn't really happy with his performance. So they kind of just had a jam session and wrote this song instead.
Wow. That's amazing.
I know. So all five members are credited with writing and arranging the song because it's quite collaborative. However, there's been a lot of kind of unsure, unclear, like different interviews have said different things of who wrote what. Like the bass player said that Freddie Mercury wrote most of it, but they all help with the arrangement, and like it's a little sort of back and forth. But and Mercury and Bowie themselves had like there was a lot of butting heads for their personality types and also their like creative control of the song.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so in an October 2008 interview, which is like one of the most recent that I could find about this song, Brian May, the guitarist, recalled, "It was hard because you had four very precocious boys and David, who was precocious enough for all of us." David took over the song lyrically. "Looking back, it's a great song, but it should have been mixed differently. Freddie and David had a fierce battle over that. It's a significant song because of David and lyrical content." So it seems like but we wrote like nearly all the lyrics, and then I guess the band was responsible for everything else. So the song was met with high critical praise. Everyone really loved it, particularly as the rest of the album, Hot Space, was seen as a bit lackluster. It sort of didn't do well, and this was kind of the saving grace for Queen. Critic Jack Whatley wrote, "The two juggernauts of Freddie Mercury and David Bowie collide here with perfect and enriching precision." There you go.
Nice.
Moving along here, we've got going to 2009, Jay-Z featuring Alicia Keys.
What?
Yes.
Empire State of Mind.
Yes. Love this song.
So good, me too. Boom, 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 yeah, boom, boom. Yeah, that awesome little piano sample is from, what's it from? It's from a 1970 song, Love on a Two-Way Street by The Moments.
Yes.
Which I'm not familiar with that song. But that's where that little, that awesome piano sample was from. Originally, so this song was written by Angela Hunter and Janet Sweel-Ulepic, I'm going to say, maybe is how you say that. But they wrote the song as like this homage, as a full song, not with rap in it, as an homage to New York as it is. And Jay-Z heard it and he kept the hook and rewrote the verses and then recorded it. Mary J. Blige was originally considered.
Right.
Which I think would have worked really well.
Yeah, that would have been.
Yeah. However, with like the piano hook, I guess Jay-Z had this like vision of Alicia Keys doing it.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of like made him.
And
like,
the VMA's performance was sick for it as well.
Yeah, it was awesome. And yeah. Yeah, so I think that's the thing that like tipped the scale, that there was piano and you think of piano with Alicia Keys.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so, and every time they perform it with like a big screen, which I think was a VMA's as well. Big screen of like different
pictures,
footage and stuff of New York behind them.
And, she, and on her album that came out like a year later, she has like Empire State of Mind Part 2, which is like the piano broken down one. Where it's like...
Yeah, that one went really well.
What year was this song again?
This 09. Was at 09 from his album, The Blueprint 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man of Brooklyn, now down in Tribeca, Rackets to De Niro, I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere.
I know the end of the verse. The end of the verse.
Cool.
The song was described as an orchestral rap ballad.
Sort of works. Because that song was really, really successful, usually that's what inspired Katy Perry to write California Girls as like the reply.
Get out.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It doesn't live up though.
Yeah.
I mean, California Girls is a great song.
Well, it was also way more successful in that song too. So California Girls went number one.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
It was huge.
No, but in the long term, was it?
It sold like five, like I think something like 5 million units or something that. It was really, really huge. Yeah.
It's weird to hear that it's a response though, because you don't.
I shouldn't say. I think I said the wrong word. Response is the right word.
It's like,
just,
you were
but
singing.
No, it just inspired her to write something about California. That's why she homages saying, well, Snoop Dogg says, I wish we could all be California girls, because that's the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Because there hadn't been any other song about California except the Beach Boys California girls.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get you. That makes more sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I chose really bad words. And
I didn't understand the correlation, but of course, it's about California girls, yeah. West Coast and East Coast situation. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, yeah. My last one.
Yes.
I was struggling to find a fifth one. I don't know why. I was a bit uninspired. And then I remembered this song, which I haven't heard in ages. It got so overplayed that I got really over it. But because it's been a while, I don't really mind anymore. Somebody that I used to know.
Boom,
the Gautier featuring person we never mentioned on this podcast, Kimbra.
Wait, I think Kimbra to Gracie is what Mariah Carey is to me.
Definitely the context of this podcast.
Yes, I think 100%.
Yeah. Where is my Kimbra sample? Is all I'm fucking saying.
That cute little
xylophony sound, that's a sample from this guy Louis Bonfar. His tune called Seville. So that's a little xylophone sample that when Gautier was writing the song, he started with that, and then he added all the other layers.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he got through, like, you know, the verse and chorus and the instrumentation and everything, and then he was just like stuck. He just hit a wall and didn't feel creatively know where that was gonna go.
COVID cough.
Quarantine. So he creatively was a bit stuck, and then the only way he seemed to be able to keep writing the song was to change the perspective and start writing from the female perspective. Yeah. And that was how he completed the song.
And Kimbra sounds awesome on that track.
Yeah, she does. She's so good.
Yeah, she's really great for it. So Gautier is a Belgian / Australian singer songwriter.
I think he lived in Brisbane for a minute too.
Did he?
I think so. Yeah, Kangaroo Point.
Oh,
yeah, true. Yeah. Well, I think he's originally from Victoria, but I won't be surprised.
Yeah, he's from Victoria.
Yeah. And the song was released in 2011, as we all know, as a second single from Gautier's third album, Making Mirrors.
Was Hearts a Mess on the same album? Was that earlier
stuff?
No, that
was much earlier.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so this was Hearts a Mess is his most famous song, apart from this one.
Yeah.
Right.
And, like, really, I don't think he was very internationally known before this song. Like, he was quite big in Australia.
Yeah, this was a sleeping hit. As in, it took time. Like, because I felt like by the time I got number one to America, I was like, I feel like I've heard this song for 2 years. Like,
yeah. by the time. But it was new.
Yes.
Yeah, it took a while before
that America. And Rolling in the Deep. Because when this song was huge, I was in first year uni. And we used to have this thing called Platform, where every Monday at midday, people in their uni bands would perform in front of everyone. And then they'd give you feedback on the spot.
Oh, okay.
Feedback on the spot is so fucking rough. We used to have that as well.
Feedback on the spot by
people. Because everyone has to watch your reaction to the feedback.
Yes.
Oh,
Or the other thing is, like, why are uni students that are in the same year as me giving me feedback? That was my...
Oh, the students gave you feedback?
The students gave you feedback. No.
So it's your peers.
That's not good. You know. I mean,
there was only one opinion I cared about then, and it was God.
Yeah.
No,
the AKA Lord. Mariah Carey.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And also, so many people performed that song as part of their uni or Rolling in the Deep. That were like the two main songs. And that's so by the end of 2011, I was like, if I hear fucking Rolling in the Deep, we'll go to you
totally,
one more time.
Totally. Yeah, that's how I felt about this song too. Yeah.
I still feel that way about it.
Yeah.
But we're all re-listening to it for this. I was like, yeah, man.
We've been refreshing, actually.
The composition of this song is so beautiful. And the whole, like, the way that the lyrics match the melody and the kind of, like, somber, nostalgic feel is, it's really great, like this. Because it is like that. I've had so many breakups. Or even talking about with their family or people that you had this like intense connection with that you shared all of your life with, and then suddenly it's done. There's nothing, and it's a really strange experience.
Mm.
And I really love the way that he delivers it, not in a way that makes you feel really heavy and pressed either. So Kimber kind of lucked out in getting this song. I have no idea who was originally planned, because it just said the high profile female vocalist. That was whoever was originally planned pulled out of the collaboration.
I don't know if that's true, but I'm just guessing.
Or Katie Noonan. That's another one that I was thinking.
But
as well.
Is she that high profile? Is she?
Yeah, she is.
Is she? Okay. Yeah. So yeah,
like in certain circles.
Yeah.
And
Katie's voice.
In jazz world, she's a bit of a.
She's not really jazzy.
No.
But she like.
Oh, what about Kate
Miller
Heidke?
Kate Miller Heidke would be awesome.
Yeah. So
all of these people are good guesses. Yeah.
Oh my god! Can we just play a game called Can We Guess the Collaboration?
Collab.
I'm kind of excited. Tina Arena.
Nah.
No.
No, she. Yeah, it's not her.
It's either Kate Miller Heidke or Katie Noonan. Heidke,
yeah.
Whatever her name is, I don't know.
And what was the other one you said? Sia. Those three are really.
Oh, Sia would be awesome. Sia.
But does Sia have the vocal range to hit?
Totally.
Yeah. Okay.
She'll break because that's her thing. Like,
yeah. It wouldn't be the same style.
Yeah.
But she'd be able to sing it.
But
Sia goes for it.
Yeah, she does.
In the most unhealthy
way. I quite like the bravery of it. It's refreshing. You just never hear it. But it is like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I fear for your voice.
I don't feel safe when I hear Sia sing.
Yeah.
Does that make
sense?
Yes.
It does make sense. But anyway, whoever this person was, they pulled out last minute.
Rhonda Birchmore.
Oh my God. Okay.
I'm going to keep on playing this game.
We all know. Birchmore in the video clip.
In like a blue like gown about like with her
legs. You know the video clip when they're naked and they get painted all over? Yeah. Like that would be Rhonda
Birchmore. It was Kylie.
This is so specific.
It's totally Kylie Minogue.
It's Danny.
It's Danny. It's Danny.
Need a research.
Danny Minogue.
Okay.
Anywho, okay. All right.
So the high profile female vocalist pulled out last minute and whoever's mixing the track, I couldn't find his name. I mean, it didn't look that hard, whatever. I was in a rush. But whoever was mixing the track suggested Kimbra.
Yeah.
And it worked out really fucking well.
I like that they were both up and coming and they got to like break America together. That's the kind of... Yeah.
Like Gotye definitely wasn't up and coming here, but yeah, absolutely they broke America together.
That song was huge. Yeah.
So it won number one in something really famous in Australia called the Triple J Hottest 100 in 2011.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing here for all of our international listeners. It's a listener poll contest. So you call in throughout the day and put in your vote or text in or whatever. And it won number one because it was huge. It topped the charts in the US, UK, Australia, New Zealand, as well as 22 other countries.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that's back when iTunes, if you went number one on iTunes, it was a pretty good indicator that you were going to go number one in that country as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was still like a physical unit or a, you know, a digital unit sale.
Yeah.
And so, and because of all that, make it by far Gotye's most successfully commercial song. There you go. Those are my five, everyone.
Oh, I love that. That was amazing. Thank you. Well, Grace, I can't wait to listen to your choices as well. I guess that was as good as mine. Yeah, it was All right, we're going to have a quick breaky break. And when we come back, we're going to hear what Sabi chose.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, stay tuned.
Welcome back. Hello, everyone. We've been talking about duets.
Yes, we have.
If you will, in the dance world, of which I am not allowed in. I mean, I wish, in my bedroom alone, you know. Yes. Kill it in front of a mirror.
You're on toe shoes, aren't you?
Sure. Now, Wasabi.
Yes, lovely.
We want to hear your choices. What do you got?
All right, I've got five delicious choices. So my first one is one that might be a little obscure, although Glee did cover it, because Glee covers everything. It's Happy Days Are Here Again, Come On, Get Happy.
Oh, yes. Judy and Barbara.
Yes, that's right, Barbara and Judy. So now it was first aired on the 1963 broadcast of the Judy Garland Show.
Yes.
And then, and I don't think it was ever actually released. It was just a collaboration that the two of them did together.
It's really cute, too.
It's gorgeous. It makes my heart sing. Mm-hmm. But it was released on Barbara's album, a 1991 album called Just for the Record.
That's right.
And then it was released on a compilation, 2002 Duets. So it has had some release, but this song is just for me, it's iconic because it's two of my favorite singers. And the way they just kind of weave these two songs together, it's a mashup, essentially. So it's probably one of the earliest mashups. And they just sing them just over each other and so beautifully and softly, because both of those singers are powerhouse singers, right? I mean, they're big, belty voices. It was kind of the age of the belt. And they just do it so softly and beautifully. And when it comes to the middle, there's like this little climax where they belt out a part together. Yes, from now on. And then it's like the song comes together. So if you think of like two ribbons kind of interweaving.
Asabi's doing ribbon hands, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, ribbon hands. To paint the picture. And then they come cigarettes together and they like rise up and then boom, they separate back again. It's just, oh, it's so beautiful. It's just a great song. So now, there's not much to know about the duet itself, but I do have a few facts about the individual songs. So Happy Days Are Here Again was originally written in 1929, and it was included on a 1930 film called Chasing Rainbows. Yeah, so it's just, you know, just a sweet little song. Get Happy is actually a 1930s Christian evangelical revivalist meeting song.
Forget your troubles, yeah. Come on, get happy.
Is it really?
Get all your tears away. Hallelujah, you're going to get happy. Get ready for the judgment day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like that bridge. It goes, get ready, cross the river. It's a really, really good song.
Yes, yes. And so now both women have done their songs, those songs individually, right? Yeah. So I believe Judy Garland sang Get Happy.
Yeah, she was known for it.
Yeah, she was known for singing that song.
Yeah, I thought it was her song.
Yeah, and she performed it in the 1950 film Summerstock.
Summerstock, yes. Yeah.
And then continued to perform it at concerts throughout the rest of her life. And then Barbara Streisand re-recorded Happy Days Are Here Again, and that was kind of her signature song. So when the two of them came together, they just overlaid them. Yeah, and it is. And when you watch the video footage, like just the banter between the two of them, how that, because Judy Garland was, you know, she was towards the end of her life, like she was older, and you have Barbara Streisand, who's this brand new up and coming singer. Yes. She's like 19 or something,
she's
and
very young,
just
yeah.
a little baby.
And their skill sets are really similar.
Oh yeah, very similar.
And I remember watching that video, and at the beginning with the banter, and they're introducing Barbara Streisand, she was like, "I just want to let you know, I hate you.
Yes,
I absolutely hate you because you're so good."
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. And Barbara's like, "Well, I hope to be hated by as many great singers as you." Yeah. So, it's so cute. It is so, so cute. So, yeah, on my scale of singability, that one gets a 10. Ooh. Yes, it's just great song. Great song. Like, I feel it from my chest. All right, my second tune is another Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson collaboration called Say, Say, Say.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Say, say, say what you want. Yeah. And this was released in 1983 on McCartney's album Pipes of Peace. I don't think Michael released it on a separate album, but McCartney did. So I love that, you know, it's just kind of, it's a bit of a funky tune. It's very funky and soulful, but it is quite simple. And you've got this little harmonica that sort of plays around through it. And when I was listening to it, I didn't realize how smooth Paul McCartney's vocals are. But he's very smooth in this tune. Like, you've got Michael in his, you know, normal falsetto, high tenor that he's singing in, and then McCartney almost matching that, but just a little bit lower in tonality, and it's beautiful. It's just a really beautiful sound. And I don't know that I ever thought of Paul McCartney as having a beautiful singing voice.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I just, I mean, I know he's, you know, a great songwriter and musician, but I just never, I guess I just didn't pay much attention to what he sounded like. And listening to this, I was kind of like, wait, who's singing? Who's singing now? And yeah, and so it's a really great tune. So now, it was written and performed by McCartney and Jackson, and it was Jackson's 7th top 10 hit in that year. So wow, he, yeah, he had at least 7 songs in the top 10 in that particular year in 1983. Oh. It went number 1 in the US, Canada, Norway, Sweden, and a number of different places. It was the 41st biggest song of all time on Billboard's Hot 100 list. So all time, it's number 41, wow. So it's up there. And it's the 9th best collaboration of all time voted by Rolling Stone readers.
That's a big
call. Yeah. So just a little tidbit. Something that I guess one of the things that we know as singers that when you own the publishing rights to your song, that's when you really make money. And so when Jackson was recording this song, he stayed with Paul McCartney, his family, during the recording. And that was a little tidbit of information that McCartney gave to Jackson. And so after that, Michael bought ATV Publishing so that he could own the rights to his music.
It's like, catalog, it's a bit of a different situation in Australia to America with the publishing rights. Like the publishing rights are everything in America.
Not so much here. Yeah, okay.
Well, like a little bit, but it's not like the be all and end all.
Yeah, that's right. Because the thing is, when you own the publishing rights, then you make money when somebody else records your song. And because that was such a huge thing to do in the US, like we've just from the music that we look at, especially in the 60s and 70s, one person releases a song and then the next year another person covers it and then another person.
Yeah.
And that's basically how these songs made money. That's how the owners of the publishing rights got rich, whereas the musicians didn't. So yeah, Paul McCartney was like, own your publishing rights.
That's true. And also it's the copyright. It's easier to explain copyright in Australia to musicians and how it works as well, because like if you register with APRA and then like if you understand what a mechanical royalty is and a performance royalty and how you can like it's not just about 50-50, it's about okay, well you get 20% of that 50% that goes, it's hard math.
Yeah,
but
right.
But the way that APRA works, it really does, like from my own experience, like it really does try to set the actual songwriters up for some type of success.
Yeah, they really have for us. It's wonderful. Have you ever got an APRA check?
Yes.
Oh my god, I've got that $5.29 in my bank
account. No. One time, I can't remember, but they were kind of like the head of like the Queensland branch of APRA at the time or something like that. And he saw me at a gig. He's like, Josh, we've got an APRA check for you. You should. He was like, I'll make sure to send it out to you. Like, I was like, oh thanks, babe. Thanks. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It was like $27.90.
It's always a small amount, but I mean, for theaters and for a lot of people that, especially now, it's like because it's like you submit your performance reports and they get your amount for it. And I'd always just play like 1 or 2 original songs. It's such a small amount of money.
$5.
Anyway, continuous.
So say, on my scale of singability, it gets an 8.
Hey.
Yeah, so I enjoy singing that song. All right, now my third song, it's another boy on boy collaboration. Easy Lover.
Do they have an OnlyFans subscription as well?
Phil Collins and Philip Bailey. So Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind, and Fire. Phil Collins, as we all know, Genesis. Now, this was on Bailey's 1984 album, Chinese Wall. And the way this song came to be, Phil Collins had been brought in to be a producer on Bailey's album. And after they'd finished recording everything, Bailey turned to Phil and he said, hey, would you be interested in writing a song with me? And that's how they came. So they sat down and they did a bit of a jam and they came up with Easy Lover. Now, this, like, there's lots of rock moments in this song. So you've got this beautiful electric guitar. Again, vocal harmonies sound amazing because it's, you know, Philip Bailey and Phil Collins, which I just realized they're 2 Phils.
Phil and Phil.
And, you know, Bailey has this beautiful falsetto voice. And then they have a video for the song, but it's basically a behind the scenes video of a video. I don't know if there's actually an actual official video for the song, but this is like a behind the scenes. So it's showing them filming a video, but yeah, I don't know. And I didn't look long enough to see if there was a proper video, but they were like, it's kind of funny that we're filming a video about filming a video.
Complex tapestry,
right? Mind blown. 1984. I love Phil Collins' wardrobe choices in the video. He's just like really like, you know, straight khakis with the pleats in them and a little shirt and a cardigan on top. I don't know. He just looks like a grandpa, but it's really cute.
So it would have been in for the hipsters.
Yeah. It's totally hipster today. Because he probably would have been in his 30s, I think. His late 20s. Or yeah, mid-30s maybe when he did this. Anyway, so now this song was co-written by Bailey and Collins and Nathan East, who is a jazz R&B bass player and probably one of the most recorded bass players in music history.
Wow.
It went number one in Canada, Ireland, the Netherlands, and the UK, number two in the US, held back by Foreigner's I Want to Know What Love Is.
My song!
Yes, that song was prolific, so I'm like, okay, yeah, I understand that. And then it won the MTV VMA for Best Overall Performance in a Video, and it was nominated for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocals in 1986 for the Grammys. On my scale of singability, it gets a 9.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, that's a great song. All right, now my next tune, I was a little shook when I was reading some information about it because I'm like, I have this CD. How come this song isn't on it? But as I researched it. So it's As, originally by Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, right.
Yep. But Mary J. Blige and George Michael did a duet cover of it back in 1999. And it was supposed to have appeared on George Michael's Ladies and Gentlemen, the Best of George Michael album, which I have a copy of because I'm a huge George Michael fan. And when I read that, I was like, wait a minute. Because I didn't know that this duet existed until maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I was like, how come it was never released anywhere? I didn't know that. And I found out as I read on, the reason it was never released in the U.S. because at the time, George Michael had been booked for... he was caught committing a lewd act in a bathroom in the U.S.
So he was sucking someone's dick.
Pretty much.
Can I say that? I know we're explicit now.
Yeah, we are explicit. Thank you, Gracie Mac. What's true? We are explicit. So, yes, so he was... Because of this conviction, the head of Mary J. Blige's production company basically wanted nothing to do with him and so refused to allow the song to appear on George Michael's album, or he refused to allow the song to be released in the U.S. And they tried to talk him out of it. Everybody was pissed off. Mary went to him and tried to get it put onto her album. He was like, nah, it's not going to be released in the U.S. at all. And so he completely blocked it being released in the U.S. And it's a beautiful fucking song. It's so like the way they've done it is so beautiful. Just the way they've interwoven the vocals with each other, and the lyrics are stunning.
Had Tommy Mottola signed him in his American stuff yet?
I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so.
Because yeah, Tommy Mottola actually kind of steered his career for America at one point as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry, random facts.
But anyway, the song itself is just it's just beautiful. Like lyrically, it's stunning. So it implies that the love the singer has for his partner will never diminish, and he says that his love for her will last until the physically impossible becomes true, if that makes sense.
That's gorgeous.
Yes. So
yeah, it's really lovely poetry.
It is. Yeah. And so like the impossible things are like rainbows burning the stars out of the sky, oceans covering the tops of mountains, dolphins flying, parrots living at sea. So it's, you know, it's just when you hear it, I love the sound of it. It's just a beautiful song. The words are beautiful. Stevie is a fucking genius. Thank you for writing beautiful
thank
music.
You,
love
Saint
you.
Louis.
Yes. So it went to number 2 on the UK R&B charts and number 4 on the UK singles charts. And then it's been covered
like
by
the song. The George Michael.
Yeah, the George
version.
Michael. And, oh. Yeah, the George Michael. And yeah, because the original only got to, I think, number 1 on the US Hot 100, like 41, sorry.
Only number one.
Yeah. Right. In 1976. So it was, so it was released in 1976 on Stevie's Songs in the Key of Life album.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just a beautiful metaphysical song. And it's been covered by a number of musicians, including Sister Sledge and the USC Sirens, which is my old singing group,
including Isabella Acapella, my singing group.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's Stevie Wonder yeah. melodies are so awesome.
Yeah, oh, they're so good. He's just, he's another prolific artist. Mm. And so on the scale of singability, this one gets a 10.
Yes.
Doing my little happy dance. Yeah. All right. Now I've got one last beautiful duet, which is, and this is, to me, this is an iconic duet. Like, everybody knows this one. I've Had the Time of My Life by Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
Oh! Somebody's preoccupied.
Can't take it back.
Now, we all know this tune from the 1987 film Dirty Dancing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the theme of Dirty Dancing, even though musically it doesn't quite fit the era of the movie, but whatever. It's a great, I love this. This whole song just kind of incites joy and love. It's got great vocal harmonies. They're kind of woven around each other, and it starts as this, like, beautiful ballad in the opening, you know, where he's like, now I had the time of my life. And then they just start in with this, like, salsa-esque rhythm that kind of comes in, and it's like, yeah, and you're boogieing. And yeah, exactly. Oh, it's there's, like, the 80s sax solo that's in there. Like, yeah. It's just... it's everything. The song rocks, and it's so happy, and it's so much fun. And like, whenever we perform it or whenever we hear it, everybody sings it. Everybody knows the song. It's just a pure happy song. So now, this song won both the Academy and Golden Globe Awards for Best Original Song, and it won a Grammy for Best Pop Song by Duo or Group with Vocals. What else can I say? It's just a great freaking song. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So it gets a 10 on my scale of singability.
Hells yeah.
And that's it. That's all I got.
That's beautiful. Those are my five songs.
Thank you
so much.
You're welcome.
I mean, those are all our duet songs, guys. What did you think?
Yeah.
Let us know.
Absolutely. I mean, I would have liked to have had someone mention Islands in the Stream by Dolly Parton.
Okay, so I do have some. Do you not like that song? Mentions.
Yeah, not really. I find it a bit naff.
Really? Well, yeah. That was one of my honorable mentions.
Oh, we don't have to talk about it.
No, it's not a flop. Like, not. No. Yeah, it's just not my thing.
It's old. It's a very old song. And it's just, it's kind of silly. That's so like, silly, yeah. We used to make fun of. Anyway, I'm not going to go there. We had some crude jokes when I was a kid about what Islands in the Stream meant. Anyway.
I mean, there's so many different ways with that, couldn't you?
Right. Mm. Oh. Lying in a bathtub, Dolly Parton. Yeah. Anyway. So some other honorable mentions. It's A Jolly Holiday with Mary, which is Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins.
Oh my god, from Mary Poppins. Wow.
Wow. I love it. I almost chose that as one of my songs. But
it's
like,
almost not a duet because there's those penguins that sing too.
That's true. The penguins. They have a little, it's such a great movie. And then Reunited by Peaches and Herb, which is a really good Reunited and it feels so good.
Oh, yeah, I do know that one. Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. Okay, amazing. So now I'm done.
Okay,
I'm done.
All right. Well, stay tuned, everyone. We got something good for you coming up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sponsored ad. So,
thank you.
Now, we've had a great playlist. We've had some fun. This beat is sick. We want to take the ride on the disco sticks. That's right. Mm-hmm. Now we got to talk about duets that we don't like. So, it's our favorite segment of the week, which is...
it's a flop.
All right. So the good with the bad, the yin and the yang. That's all I have to say about that.
The in and the out.
Yeah, the in and the out.
The up and the down.
The up and the down. We're going to add one. We're each going to add a duet that we don't like very much into the playlist as well. So we'll start off with Asabi.
Yes, my duet is Stuck With You, Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande.
How did we know that a Justin Bieber song was going to get chosen?
I didn't know one existed, and then when I saw it, I was like, no, stop. Oh, my God. I can't, I was like, I can't get away.
It's I'm really hating this whole
trap
wholesome
thing.
Oh no, I don't mind trap, but this whole like wholesome I'm just here for you girl Justin Bieber shit that
that's
he's doing.
That's not wholesome. It's
nasty. No, like he's going for this angle of like I'm your man.
When he's talking
husband,
about I'm gonna make your
he actually
your toes
always used
curl.
To sing about that when he was a kid, but it was like cute.
And then he
it'd
went
be like,
for, yeah.
And but I still his best stuff. Besides, well, I love like Boyfriend, like when it was getting a bit more sexier.
Yeah.
And As Long As You Love Me. And
yeah, that one was alright.
Oh no, that's but the lit song was that. Is it too late now to say sorry?
Yeah, I mean, that's I've not never too been bad. Yeah. But yeah, I do agree that was kind of a good, or at least his better era. But yeah, like that song Holy, I hate that it just brought out so bad, just because of how like it just has this this insincerity about it that I'm like, stop trying to push this so intensely.
I feel
anyway,
like,
it's your flop, not mine.
That's true. And also, I feel like he has a lot of yes people around him. That's what
I feel like that too.
Because he's releasing music that's so subpar, but people around him are like, yeah, it's good, man. This is gonna like change,
he's
change
Usher,
the world.
Usher, isn't he? Like Usher is who we have.
Well,
early
that
day.
Ages
that's
ago.
early
yeah,
days.
Okay.
Yeah, when he
that's when he was like 13.
Yeah, when he was busking in the street as a kid, like that
yeah,
like, sort
okay.
of thing. Yeah, like when he was actually like genuinely talented at 11 years old, riffing the house down, playing guitar. Like that was.
I think Usher should go to jail for unleashing. Crap on.
So Gracie, what have you chosen for?
Well, I've chosen a song that I listened to the first line. I was like, oh, that's my flop. It's called Marvin Gaye.
Oh, yes.
It's by Charlie Puth and Megan Trainor.
Oh,
yeah, it's a terrible
it's
song.
Awful.
Charlie Puth is really talented.
I really
let's
just
get
like
it
Charlie
on
Puth.
Like Marvin Gaye. Isn't that what he says?
Yeah.
Like that.
God. Let's Marvin Gaye and get it on. That was the first line. I was
like,
ugh, flop.
Yeah,
not
yeah,
cool.
It's a terrible
don't
song.
Like it. Don't like him. Don't like.
Yeah,
him.
He's super talented, but he's just like I just don't get the best vibes from him. Yeah.
I don't like his face. You know, like the what's that song? I know because of my one of my students was singing it. I'm only one call away. I'll be there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That song, and in the video clip, he's sitting at a piano. And his face is so, like, douchebaggy. I don't know what
God.
Is. Like, it's not his fault he looks like that, but I don't like him.
It's his parents. His parents
should
be
jailed.
He just has
this, like... Like, you can't see me. I mean, it's a podcast. What am I doing? Yeah. Why am I miming it? But he, like...
We
yeah,
can see you and
you
we
can,
understand.
Good. That was a localized joke for
yes,
three
yes.
of us.
Thank you.
I laughed.
Lovely.
Oh, we laughed.
Oh, we did laugh. Now, Joshua.
Yes. I got a full name. I'm serious.
Full name. Is that your full
You're
name?
You're in trouble.
Joshua, yeah. So I'm going to get killed for this, but I actually cannot stand You're the One That I Want from Greece.
Oh,
no,
that's
I was
fine.
So close
no, that's
to putting
good.
That on my list.
Like,
I was very close
It's
as
just
well.
Not for me. It never has been for me, to be quite bloody honest.
I think it was definitely for me at some point, yeah.
Like, Olivia Newton-John sounds really good in it. I'll give it that. But, like, John Travolta is not a singer to me. Like,
no, I agree with
sort
that.
Of thing.
They should have dubbed him.
And I know that, like, it's such an iconic movie musical sort of thing.
There's only one good song from that movie, though.
Boom.
Grease.
Which one?
Grease.
Oh, that's a good song, too.
Oh,
no,
that's
no,
a good song.
No, I think there's a couple of good songs. I like Hopelessly Devoted.
I thought you were going to say
I think that's, like,
devoted.
The worst
but
song in that.
Now there's no
so good.
Well, and I sing in a nighty. In a nightgown.
Do you?
Like imagine myself looking at myself in
a
like
Sandra
a
D. Wick.
Can we do that during the Christmas show? Like
what
with
Christmas?
A fake mirror. What do you mean what Christmas show? No, like a mirror like it's you know, like it's the audience can see you, but it's pretend like you're pretending you're looking through a mirror. You
I
know,
always,
they do it on RuPaul all the time.
Yeah,
I
would imagine like doing that to like Christina Aguilera's Beautiful. Like I'm playing every day.
Yeah.
Start off a cappella.
So wonderful. And you're like the lipstick gets all over your face.
Oh my God, yeah, so it's not my song. Sorry to all the white people out there that love this song. Like, I know it's your jam. I know that like at a sports bar.
Oh God.
Where this song will come on and you all will get up.
Does this come on at a sports
you're
bar?
Like, dudes pop their collars.
Pop their collars and shit. Or it's also a karaoke duet classic as
well.
Yeah,
it is a classic, yeah.
Actually, recently when I went to a karaoke restaurant, this song was definitely sung.
Really?
Like, it's just...
Of course. I mean,
yeah.
it's like a
Yeah, I get it. It's timeless. But it's just like, it's just not for me.
Never have I ever.
But also, like I remember seeing Grease and enjoying it, but never like people are passionate about that movie. Like,
yeah, they are.
Like they get like don't speak ill of John Travolta. Yeah.
Do you remember when it was re-released for its like 25th anniversary? Yes, or whatever, I do. In 1998. Yeah, I went with my a cappella group, and like everybody in the theater was singing along. Like
my favorite song from Grease is Beauty School Dropout.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But Billy Porter singing it.
Yes,
like that's the shit for me. I'm gonna look that up.
When we're done.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Cool. Alrighty. Well, that is the end of this episode.
That's it.
A short but sweet episode, to say the least. Thank you for coming to the lab with us. My name is Josh DeVetta. We've got Asabi Goodman.
Hey,
we've had Gracie Mack. We've actually nearly finished our season, guys.
We're so close.
Which is, yeah, we're going to finish it. We're going to do 30 episodes this season. We've decided.
Oh, are we? Okay.
Asabi's like, I'll just record it without y'all.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
All right. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast every single week.
Yeah.
And listening in. We love hearing from you all. I love getting the text messages from my friends. Like, one of my really, really close friends, he does like a play-by-play, like, oh, I love that song too. And actually, I'll tell a little cute anecdote before we go, is that my friend who loves this podcast, he's really, really passionate, shout out to Brendan. I had a recording project with Asabi a couple of weeks ago, and he was like gagged that he got to meet Asabi from the Shuffology podcast. He was like,
the Asabi.
Yeah. Actually, Asabi's a part of a project that I'm doing at the end of the year, and people are gagging that Asabi's in it. People love Asabi. Like,
I totally do.
I thought I was an icon. No, it's Asabi.
I remember like once I was at a gig of yours, Asabi, and friends came up to me and I was like talking to you, and then I walked away and they were like, you know Asabi?
Yeah, literally.
No, can you introduce?
Like, oh my god, yeah. No. The drummer that's in my show this year is like, I didn't know that you had Asabi. I'm like so keen for this gig now.
Oh god.
I'm like, say Asabi one more time.
So good. Yeah. Say one more time and you're out.
Yeah, exactly.
I am blushing.
Yeah. Well, have a great week, everyone, and we will see you soon for another episode of Shuffology. Thanks for listening.
Hello. I hope you enjoyed/are enjoying/will enjoy whatever podcast I'm in right now. Once you're finished with it, why not pop on over to Broadway and Other Kiwi Dreams, a podcast exploring the lives and minds of theatre practitioners in and around the New Zealand performing arts industry. Join me, James Shearer, in a deep dive into what makes this industry tick. You'll hear conversations with some of the top names in the Aotearoa performing arts scene and beyond, from the up-and-coming to the big Shorty Street stars. So, if you're into the performing arts, come on over to Broadway and Other Kiwi Dreams. Because no two journeys are the same, and wherever you are in yours, I hope we can inspire you to soldier on and keep following your Kiwi dreams.
That's Not Gunnin Productions podcast.